Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
Yeah, always.
Guys, you know who's here. Honor Kagler. Dies in Every Film is here. And this is the Full Blast Podcast, and I am Jeff Fader. And before we get into it, let's take care of a little business. First things first, I want to thank our friends at Broadback Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This thing is sick. And if you go to BroadbackIronworks.com, you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, and you're going to get 10% off everything. The grinders, attachments, all the parts. It's great. And they're a great company. And I'm thrilled to be working with them often. They're great, and I appreciate it. Next are my friends at EvenHeat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. Listen, if you're a knife maker, you're a tool maker, if you got to get it hard, you might as well use an EvenHeat. You know what I'm saying? I am with them, and I'm looking forward to seeing them soon, probably at Maker Camp. And great company, great family. I'm all in with EvenHeat. Next, my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. Maritime Knife Supply for all your knife-making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, press, heat-treating ovens, all that stuff. They're in Canada, and they are a great company, and they're shipping United States. We've talked about the tariffs. We've talked about the whole thing. Lawrence is trying to do everything he can to make sure that he can ship you the things that you need based off of the country of origin. We can talk about that later. It's a long litany of things, but by all means, support Lawrence Lake. He's very involved with the New England School of Metalwork and the Center for Metal Arts, and that's really important. And if you're in Canada and you're not using Maritime Knife Supply, shame on you. And if you're in the United States and you can use Maritime Knife Supply, I would suggest doing that 100%. They're great, and their website's all squared away for you. So definitely go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Support our friend. Next, I want to thank my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Staberil Knife Finishing Vice. Their vices are built in the heart of Texas. Not only do they sell these great knife finishing vices, but they have T4 sentinel oil and knives, and they teach classes. So definitely support them. And if you go to checkout and you put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you get 10% off everything at Trojan Horse Forge. I just got a new product from Baker Forge, and I can't talk about it yet because they haven't figured it out. I don't know when they want to start to release it, but the guys at Baker Forge are constantly coming out with new stuff. They got great stuff. Go to BakerForge.com or BakerForge and Tool on Instagram. All that sand mai, all that bronze mai, copper mai, all that stuff, it's great. And if you go to Baker Forge, you can put in the promo code FULLBLAST and you get 10% off. Definitely 100% get involved. If you're a stock removal guy, this is the stuff for you. Easy to work with. It's all annealed, ready to go. It's easy to heat treat. They hold your hand the whole way. And when you're done, you need to etch it. You got to use that gator piss. You know what I'm saying? Gator piss. GatorPiss. Gator short for alligator. Piss is short for urine. This is the best stuff to etch your steel. I'm telling you. And they got two new ones. Not only do they have Gator Piss, but they have Gator Piss Max and Gator Piss Heavy. Gator Piss Max is for that stainless Damascus. And all of a sudden, you don't need to get that hot muriatic acid in your shop. You don't need to worry about that. You get that Gator Piss Max. And I'm with them. And if you're in the United States, you can also use Texas Farrier Supply, and you can get all your Gator Piss and all that stuff over there, including you can get all your Rhino Wet, you can get your knife-making supplies, your blacksmithing supplies, your bladesmithing supplies. And if you go to TexasFarrierSupply.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you get 10% off. I want to thank my friends at Total Boat. They sent me a pile of stuff. They're very happy with me. I got the two-part epoxy. They gave me the a dispenser. I'm like a epoxy barista now. It's unbelievable. And they got me the Fathom. The Fathom is that thick set deep casting resin that you can make handle hybrid materials with that I've been really having a great time with. And you don't need a pressure pot. They say that I was talking to them, and the reason why it works is because without bubbles is because so thin, and it cures very slowly, and there's no bubbles, I'm telling you. So go to totalboat.com/fullblast and then check out what they got, and then that link will get you a discount. And if you're at Maker Camp, I'm going to be doing a two-day demo with Total Boat. We're going to make some knife handle scales, so go check me out with them over there. And get yourself some of the UV cure resin, get yourself some of that two-part epoxy, get the dyes, get the all that stuff, totalboat.com. Definitely want to thank my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. Greg has sent me some more of that beautiful G-Carta. G-Carta's unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm, all that stuff. Stuff is awesome. And it's easy to work with, and it's colorful, and it'll put some razzle-dazzle in your ding-dong. So definitely get yourself some of that G-Carta. I got a whole set coming up this week of a trout series, trout fishing series that's going to be on the website of our Fader Knives, and I'm using all G-Carta. So definitely check that out. This stuff is sick. Next are my friends at Tormach, celebrating 50-plus years of being in business with the Black TH sharpening system. I'm telling you, it's a great piece of equipment, and a lot of guys are starting to really use the belts on their grinders, and what you're going to get is you don't realize this, but a lot of you guys can get a lot of undercut. So all of a sudden, that nice radius of yours is going to go a little bit, it's going to be a little bit thinner on your heel, and maybe you don't want that. So go get yourself a Tormach, and you get a water-cooled sharpening wheel. Thing is awesome, and those guys are great. So I'm a huge fan, and they're going to come down to the shop sometime. We're going to film some content, I'm under the impression. If you think to yourself, if you're in Australia and you think to yourself, boy, I want all these things that Jeff's talking about, but I just don't know if I want to spend the money, you should go to Nordic Edge, Nordic_Edge on Instagram. Go to nordicedge.com.au. Not only do they sell all the stuff you need if you're in Australia, but they also teach classes. You got spoon carving, knife making, blacksmithing, all that stuff. Mertansu's involved. It's good enough for me. Sausage Man Forge is very involved, and that's good enough for me too. Bjorn's amazing, and they have all the things that you need. They got the guidance to help you accelerate your creativity and the tools, products, and supplies to help you manifest your ideas, ladies and germs. NordicEdge.com.au. And last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives, phoenixabrasives.com. They are the suppliers of superior abrasive products for every application, knife making, metal fabrication, glass fabrication, floor sanding, and crankshaft. I don't know what that is, but they got it for you. Belts, grinding, cutting disc, flap disc, surface conditioning stuff, like surface conditioning belts. And when you go to checkout, you put in the promo code FB10, and it's going to give you 10% off everything on your cart. So definitely want to thank them. And with that said, I want to thank all my sponsors. You guys have been fantastic. I'm getting a lot of nice messages from them. They're happy with what we're doing, and that's good enough for me. I really, really want to thank my next guest. I've had him for a couple times. Actually, the last time he was here was with his lovely wife before they were getting married. Honor Kagler's here. Honor is the mastermind behind Dies in Every Film. Guys, underrated. Underrated as far as I'm concerned. Honor, how the hell are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I can't believe it was that long ago. Like it's like just past our third wedding anniversary.
That was hilarious. I had you and Emma on. You guys were right before the wedding, and it was the pre-wedding episode. But you've had a lot going on those last 3 years.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride. I mean, yeah,
I feel like you've been on the move. You've been on the move since. I mean, we kind of talked, and we talked before the pandemic, but I think since the panty, I think that you've been really on the move.
Yeah, it's I feel like you need to occupy your mind with stuff, don't you?
You've been doing it in such a positive way. Like I feel like when I say you're underrated, I feel as though. And also honors on the Fire and Steel podcast with Chris Powell and Toby Morrell. Is it Merle or Morrell?
It Toby don't matter. He's just the editor at the moment.
He's the editor. Good old Toby. I'm just kidding, Toby. I almost called you Toby Maguire, ladies and germs, but I mean, that would have been giving you too much.
Yeah,
but I mean, I feel as though you've been doing so much with your life. And one of the things, reason I say you're underrated is because you have been doing really consistently great content for since I first met you, you know, back before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Consistent, you've been really consistent, which is very amazing. And not to mention, we've talked before, you were a former MMA fighter, and now you're starting to get back into grappling and MMA. You've been on this incredible fitness journey. It just feels like you're a man of discipline.
Yeah, I think the problem is, like I say, you need something to occupy your mind. And the thing is, like, knife making originally was a hobby. But then when it becomes your job, it's no longer, like, you can't really treat it as like, oh, well, this is still my hobby. You have to then have another hobby. And I cleared up so much time and freed up time. And so I thought, well, it's time to get sort of back into competing and stuff. And I do want my black belt eventually. So I need to compete and try and prove my worth at least somewhere along the line.
I remember during the pandemic, you and I were talking because I got in the Peloton bike, because
yes.
I really felt like it was one of those things that could fit into my life. And I got my balls broken relentlessly on Knife Talk because I wouldn't shut up about the Peloton. and I honestly, for me, it was a really great way, because I used to run a lot, and I felt very strongly about the fact that I wanted to age gracefully. But when I was 30, I got a blood test back, and they said my cholesterol was a little bit high, and the alarm bells went off. My wife is a nurse practitioner, and so the alarm bells go off. And next thing you know, I said to myself at 30, I'm like, well, I'm not going to be one of these guys at 60. The doctor says you have to change your lifestyle dramatically now. So when I was 30, I started doing more running. I did the New York City Marathon 12 years ago, and then, you know, I'm trying to run this business and all that. And I feel as though that idea of the fear of the future and not being, you know, I don't want to be told what to do when I'm 60. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And it's become one of those things where now I'm running the New York City Marathon in 7 weeks, and you and I have been talking, and you're doing marathons, and you're doing like ultra marathons now. I just don't know. You got a couple kids, you got this wonderful home with your lovely wife, and you got all these dogs. I don't know how you do it all.
In fairness, you know, like when you said about the Peloton, that the Peloton's what sort of freed up time for me, because before the pandemic, what I used to go to a gym and train, like a CrossFit gym, and then obviously we moved before we got, I mean, after we got married, which is further away from the gym. So if I wanted to go to a gym now, because we're a bit further out, we're probably a couple of miles out, and it's not even like it's a crap road as well, so it's a slow road. So you're probably looking at half an hour to get to a gym. And then that's, if you say half an hour there, half an hour back, that's an hour gone already. But so
right.
We have the Peloton to start off with, which is, it's good. You know, like you've got the bike, but then you've got all the exercises. You know, you could just buy some simple weights and you can do all the other, you know, like strength stuff. And then we've slowly like added weights and stuff to like the gym area so that I've pretty much got everything I need there. So I've got no excuse really. Like I come home, the kids are at home. And I could just go straight in there while the kids are at home before Emma comes home, and I can get my workout done. There's no excuse, you know, anywhere at all, because it's not like, oh, well, I need to wait for Emma to come home before I can go to the gym. That's half an hour. You know, it's just literally the half an hour what would pick to go to gym. I'm already in the gym and training pretty much sometimes nearly finished. And it's obviously not everyone's able to do that, but that's why I think the Peloton's a good thing, because you don't even need loads of space. Like obviously, you know, like you could fit a Peloton in a small area really. I mean, my mum's got it in a living room, and it's just in corner in a living room, and it's she uses it quite frequently. The brilliant bit of kit really.
But yeah, but here's the thing, but at the same time, you can have all this stuff, but it's a question of some people just have all that stuff, they just refuse to use it. I feel like after the pandemic, you and your wife made a conscious decision to really kind of be more pushing yourselves in terms of your health.
Yeah. I think the better thing is that we sort of spur each other, so to speak. Like say today, Emma came home and she said, I can't really bother to train. Like, it's Monday, innit? The weather's crap. So it sort of puts you on a downer. Like, can't really be bothered to train. I said, well, I'm training anyway because I've only got a short training thing. And then she was like, oh, well, I might as well just get it done then. So it's sort of, you know, you're sort of like bouncing off each other. Like, if you can't be bothered, one of us can be bothered, they'll go train. And then, you know, if she ever trains and I can't be bothered, then I go in there just out of pure stubbornness because I'm like, well, she's training. Then I'll let her beat me. I'm going to go train as well.
But I mean, you were, like I said before, you were a professional MMA fighter, and then you kind of, I don't know if you kind of petered off a little bit, and now you've become very, very involved. You're in you're tubing a lot of tournaments these days. We kind of talked a little bit online in terms of, like, you know, I make jokes about me having a midlife crisis. What kind of made you want to go back into grappling?
Well, the thing was, like, I retired from fighting because I was just getting too old, and because of business, like, with business being so busy, and I train in Leeds, which is 60, 70 miles away from where I live, so
wow.
Every day, like, I'd get up on a morning, drive to Leeds, train there all day, come back, sometimes I'd stay over, and then it was just, obviously, like, now I've got two kids, I'm married, we've got dogs, I've got a business, I couldn't really do that, but then, so I retired for a bit, and then just did my own stuff. And then I actually came to the conclusion, like, actually, if I'm doing MMA, I can't, like, there's nowhere really local. But if I'm grappling, there's actually gyms close to me. So I can go to the gyms close to me, and then I can still do all my other stuff. And then, like, last Tuesday, I went through and trained with Danny. So I can still go through and train in Leeds as well. I just have to, like, free up some time, you know, like, do a lot of work 1 week and then I free up a couple of days and I know that I can go through and train there. So I thought, well, actually, grappling's the thing what I started doing anyway and I enjoyed it the most, so why take that away? And then I went to one of the open days at AVT before they closed the gym and opened the newer place and I got promoted, so I was like, right, well, that's a kick up ass then. Like, originally when I retired, I was a purple belt, and I thought, for me to get to black belt, there's two more belts, and I'm probably never going to do it. So then I thought, it doesn't really matter. But then when I got promoted to brown belt, I thought, there's one more belt now. If I kick ass out of it for a year or two, chances are I'll hopefully pick it up at some point. So that's another thing to sort of spur it on, like having a promotion. It's another thing ticked off the bucket list, I guess.
And it is slightly annoying that you gloss over the fact when you said Danny to the listener, he's talking about Danny Mitchell, who is a former MMA fighter, a UFC fighter. He's a legend. Danny Mitchell is legitimately in the MMA world. He is a total legend. I remember watching him fight back in the UFC. The guy is a legend. And you're just like glossing over that. I appreciate it. But I loved seeing I was following, I guess last week, Danny Mitchell was doing some bare knuckle boxing, a short reel. And then you were his dummy.
Yeah.
You were his dummy. And it was so cool seeing you there. Cause I mean, I watched Danny Mitchell back in the day. You know, I remember watching him fight. And I wrote, there's Danny. I said, there's dies in every film. He's the man. And then Danny writes back, he's a manlet. He's a manlet. And I thought that was so cool. I think it's so awesome that you have this great relationship with these really, really high level guys.
Yeah. Well, like, Danny's obviously been doing loads of BKFC fights, and he's had quite a few recently. And
bare knuckle fighting.
Yeah, but the bare knuckle. And then obviously Rico, like, me and Danny and Rico are sort of close friends. And then Rico won the BKFC title, the European title, not that long ago as well. Me and Emma went and watched him in, where was it?
Greece or Italy or something?
Yeah, in Italy, yeah. I can't think what part.
I know that these guys are all fearless and you've all taken punches that most people couldn't. With the bare knuckle, do you worry about, like, breaking your hands, or you're worried about, like, getting just, like, destroyed? It seems like it's like the last final boss of, like, getting your ass just kicked out of nowhere.
I mean, I definitely would. I know that Danny's hurt his knuckles quite a few times doing it. And I mean, after the title fight, what Rico had, just the state that Rico was in, and he fought Jimmy Sweeney in that fight, and they both actually got blue-lighted to hospital because Rico had to have a brain scan, and they didn't even think Jimmy Sweeney, like, the thought that he was possibly going to die. Like, that's how bad they were.
Oh, my God.
Which sort of puts everything into perspective as well, because you think they don't get paid enough to do that. Like, they absolutely battered each other from pillar to post, and like you say, it's bare knuckle, it's bone on bone, and it's just not good for you at all. I won't be doing it. My hands are too delicate. I used to hurt them when I used to hit stuff with the gloves on, so I think if I did it with bare knuckles, I'd definitely damage some of it.
I don't know, because I've never done. I wrestled in high school, but I mean that doesn't really mean anything. I would think that the mindset for the
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Bare knuckle fighting is different than, say, boxing, because you're much less likely to want to just take some punches, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the thing is, as well, with the bare knuckle thing is, in even just like getting hit with a hard shot, like them shots, because the glancing shots just rip you open. Like the amount of blood, like we've seen, like I say, when Rico and Jimmy Sweeney fought that last fight, there was just blood everywhere. Like I'm sure Rico's shorts originally were white, and then they were just like stained red after that. It's just from them little shots where you might just, you know, like just slip the cheek a little bit, and it just rips that skin open. Whereas a glove doesn't tend to do that. You know, like when you're glancing, it it'll bounce your head a little bit with a glove on.
So these are friends of yours, and you're going to go watch them fight. And you know, I know you and Emma make a big thing of it, and you're like, I love seeing the pictures of you. Like almost, you're sitting in the audience, but during the whole surrounding it, you're in pictures hanging out with them. Do you get worried for their health when they're out there?
I said to Danny after his last fight, I was like, you and Rico need to stop fucking fighting, because I swear I'm more nervous for them fighting than I am my own, like than I was when I used to fight myself. It's just because I feel like, I don't know if it's like a weird thing where you're not in control, so you just can't, you know, like there's nothing you can do. It's a weird way of thinking about it. I just generally think like there's nothing I can do, like the fighting, and you know, like obviously if you were in the streets and your friends are fighting, you'd probably try and help them or split up or try and stop it or whatever. But when they're in a ring fighting for some of what they want to do, then you've just got to sit and watch, and there's no outcome. Like you don't know who's going to win or who's going to lose. You don't know how they're going to lose or how they're going to win. You know.
I'd be like, I wouldn't be able to watch if it was a friend of mine. I'd be like, I'd be just too afraid. I'm a bit of a pussy, you know? And so it's like, and I'm fine with that. I actually, growing up in New York City, I've never had to get in any fights because I've talked my way out of muggings three times.
Always the best option.
I swear to God, I might have some sort of high level belt in talking my way out of fighting. One guy when I was in high school, I was with my friends, and they pulled us over, or they wanted to mug us, and then they pulled the shirt up, and there was the gun sticking out of their waistband, and we somehow talked. My friend said, "All right, if you're gonna beat us up, just go ahead and beat us up now. What are we gonna do? Why are we staying around here? You're gonna beat us up, beat us up." And the guy was just like, "We don't want to beat you up," and walked away. But the best one was, I was helping open up a restaurant. My wife and I were living in a really lousy area, and I had to go to this restaurant at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I walked through this really, really weird street, and this guy says to me, "Hey, you have any money?" And I'm like, "No, I don't have any money." And he goes, "Well, I'm going to follow you to the subway so you give me money." And I don't know, I might have been tired. I don't know what happened. And I turned to him and I said, "If I had any money, do you think I'd be going to work at 3 o'clock in the morning?" And the guy said, "That makes a lot of sense." And he turned around. And I got to the subway thinking I just almost got mugged. So I feel very strongly that I mean, those were two good little easy ones, but I've never been in a fight before, so I wouldn't really know how to feel.
Yeah, it's probably the best, I think.
Yeah,
I feel like this is the thing what I sort of have ongoing with my children now, because they're sort of, well, they're not like the eldest is like eight, and he's, you know, he's going through that stage where, like, a few times he squared up to me, and I'm like, this is just not going to happen, mate. Like, and like I keep having to tell him, like, you're not, like, because obviously kids at school they talk tough, and, you know, and he comes home and he tries to act tough and that, and I'm like, it's not what you think it is, mate. Like, try to be a tough guy is not, like, you look at any person who thinks they're a tough guy. We live in a small town for a start, so you're absolutely nobody on the, you're just a blip on the map, you know. And it's just leave school properly and just get a proper job.
Oh god. Yeah, I get really worried about. I mean, I'm lucky that my daughter's out of that world. She went to school in a very kind of tough. We have a very tough town, and there was a lot of white flight. And Lila, my daughter, was in a you know, she started this school, and it was like one of the only white kids in the school. And she really kind of got to see a lot of different types of people and different types of upbringings. And she was kind of accepted because she was there from the beginning. And what she used to say was, it really kind of made her very. In a tough situation, there were gangs in the school. There were really tough kids there. She found herself learning how to become a little bit more protective of herself. Yeah. And even now that she's in college in this kind of like nice college campus in California, she's, you know, her friends think that she's very, like, you know, quiet and like guarded. And she said it's because, like, when you're in the school that I was in, you really had to be, you know, you had to, you know, watch what you're doing, watch who you talk to portray yourself in a specific way. And she had to learn how to kind of something that I never had to do.
Yeah. You've got to sort of be diplomatic, I suppose. Aren't you? You've got to be.
Yeah.
But we're sort of conservative about everything, which would be, I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? It's just a shame that a lot of people don't see it that way.
It's hard. You know, before we started the podcast, I told you, I said, you know, I have some weird news. If you want to do some weird news. And then I said, not that we need, I mean, it seems as though everything in the world is weird anyway. Yeah. There's no, I mean, what isn't weird news? So. But things have just been coming very strange lately, and I don't know. It's been kind of a tough spot in our society.
I actually said to someone the other day that I feel like when all the lockdowns happened, when the pandemic happened, what actually happened is everyone died, and we're all now in a simulation. That's the only possible reasonable explanation.
It's hilarious.
For the chaos that's happened. We literally just all died, and this is a simulation of what's continuing. And
that's hilarious. Everyone was at home. We died, and then we were respawned in our homes, and then now this is the new life. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's the only real. It's like you try and explain it. Obviously, we're humans. We try and logically explain stuff, don't we? We try and explain anything, and then I just think that's got to be the only explanation. There's no other explanation.
It makes a lot of sense. And you know what the funny thing is? I was talking to somebody, and they were saying, you know, the problem in this world is social media. And I said, well, not really. I said the problem is any good things that, you know, humans come up with, humans fuck them up.
Yeah.
You know, so you have these perfectly good pieces of technology, you have these perfectly good concepts, but we seem to not be able to use them in a positive way.
We're sort of self-destructive, I feel. But I say we, I mean, like, obviously, this is probably the best thing about social media. You sort of become, you can now see more people who are less self-destructive. But, like, it's the same, it's the exact same argument, you know, like when the government try and ban knives, and I say, like, it's not knives that are a problem, it's people that are a problem. And it's the same with the internet, you know, like, right. Like you just said, it's not the internet, it's the people on the internet, which I always find, like, obviously people criticize everything I do, and the Damascus debate is a massive one. Like, people will say it's not Damascus, but you've literally got the internet at your hands where you can search Damascus and realize that, oh, actually, that's what people call Damascus now. It's got nothing to do with the ancient. I'm not saying this is ancient Damascus. I'm saying this is now what we know as Damascus because that's what we call it. But now they'd rather not do that. And then it's just like, well, you are self-destructive, mate. Like, you're using this platform to criticize me rather than just using this platform to educate yourself. Like, I feel like that is the problem, that people don't want to be educated. Like, I want to learn about everything. If I learn about one, like, say, one person from history, then I'm looking at that thing, and then I look at, like, different timelines. Do I say different timelines? Different people, like, say if it was, you know, like a, say a war hero or something, then you're looking at his company or, you know, whatever battalion he was in, whatever region he was from. And I always want to know stuff. Like, I'm always wanting to further sort of my education. I was poor in school, but like now I feel like the problem with in school is you get taught the same. Everyone gets taught the same. But we all learn differently. Or we all want to know things differently. But that's what the internet is good about. You know, I like history. I like stuff about, I like crime stuff. So I can just go online and search crime stuff, history stuff, you know, like anything like that. And my brain just absorbs it. You know, like it shows that schools should maybe be different than the way they are anyway, at least.
I've had this conversation with a lot of people, and I wonder. And part of the wondering is, you know, I used to say this. I was a terrible student. I had dyslexia, dyscalculus, which is for, you know, math, and, you know, it was bad. It was really like a struggle for me, and but I had to figure out ways in which to be successful because I wanted to be successful, and I had to like force myself to doing certain things. And I started to think, and people would say to me, oh, you know, it's not fair, and you're not a good tester and all this stuff. And the older I get, the more I realize, I feel as though I think that, you know, obviously these public school systems and private school systems are trying to like set a baseline for the expectations that people are going to have. And unfortunately, we can't be in a situation. I think that when we're in this situation where kids are learning what they want to learn, when they want to learn it, you know, I think it's great, but at the same time, you're not learning the discipline of having to follow an assignment. And I think that the biggest problem that we have in society, and I don't want to be this guy, but I'm going to be it right now, is there's this lack of discipline in regards to understanding what's expected of you. Yeah. Somebody was telling me that college is only for learning how to college is only for getting a job. And if that's the case, then you should just get a job without going to college. And what I was saying was, you know, college is also a place where kids learn how to behave and to act as adults without their parents telling them what to do. They have to learn organization. They have to learn the discipline of being able to do the jobs that they're supposed to do, the classes they're supposed to do, the assignments they're supposed to do. They're supposed to learn how to occupy their time in a positive manner. And I think makes them learn how to be social, which when you're coming to, you know, when you meet somebody who's just been like locked up in a, you know, in their room for 14 years, they're relatively unable to, you know, interact with other people. You know, you get, it's more of a social experiment than it is just, you know, about getting a job done. So I don't know. I think that I feel like part of that's also made a lot of kids very soft.
Yeah. I definitely see that, like the soft side, especially with my kids. I do try and bring them up and be like, I'm the tough parent and Emma's the soft parent. They wouldn't still have the upbringing that I would have, and so it's sort of impossible to simulate any of it, because obviously at school schools are very soft now. Like when I was at school, like I remember like a teacher punching me, and I remember coming home and telling my mum, and my mum was just like, well, what did you do wrong?
Right.
Nowadays, if anything like that, the teacher would be all sorts of chaos. And I mean, I'm not condoning teachers hitting someone, but I know that I did wrong. Like thinking back now, and I think about it, and I think, well, I deserved every second of it. But nowadays, the kids wouldn't handle that. Like they wouldn't handle it the way that, you know, like that I did at that time.
It's a tough spot, and the hardest part is these kids are not learning how to be they're not learning how to be disappointed with grace, and I feel as though that's something that becomes. Not being able to accept disappointment and understand how to get past it is one of the biggest problems, because you don't learn how to grow from the mistakes. You know, you just see this failure, and then it upsets you that there was this failure, as opposed, because when you get older, you got to learn how to deal with these problems. And the weirdest part is, and I talk to my kid all the time. You know, the funny thing is when I went to college, I really wanted to be an artist. I wanted to be a sculptor, and I wanted to go to an art school. My father forbid it. He wanted me to go to a school where I get a rounded education. And when I got there, I met so many kids who were like rich kids. And I skated through, and I was really lucky to get into the school. And I saw these kids who didn't give a shit. And I saw them not going to class, failing out, parents bailing them out, all this stuff. And all I could think of is, man, somebody really could have used that spot.
Yeah.
And my attitude by the time I was like a sophomore in college was like, well, I owe it to somebody that I shouldn't waste my spot here that somebody else could have changed their life with. And it made me work harder because I thought, well, if I'm going to just fuck around, I should just leave this spot for somebody else. And then I gave that advice to my kid when she was going to college. I said, think about it like this. Don't be a waste of space. Because if that's the case, somebody else would rather be there than you. And she said it really one of the best pieces of advice is because she felt like she owed it to, you know, the person who would have had a better experience.
You know, it's funny you should say that because while you were saying it, I thought that I've got the sort of pretty much the exact same experience. But when I joined the army, you go away for 2 days for like your assessment thing to see whether you can actually join the army. And there was people there whose parents, you know, they had military families who were failing. Right. They were failing stuff, and they were coming out crying. And I passed everything, and I got through. And I, like at that point, and I didn't care though. That was the thing. Like they really wanted it, and I was just there just because I was a bum, you know. And if I hadn't done that, then I'd made nothing of my life. I'd probably either be dead or just drinking in myself into a stupor or something like that. But like that was at the point where I sort of like opened my eyes and I thought, these guys want it. Like they've lost it and they're crying and I'm getting it and I don't even care. And it was at that point where I was just like, right, well, this is, you know, like it's time to actually make it worthwhile, you know, like rather than just getting something and throwing it away. And I genuinely think that people nowadays don't have that. Like they'll lose just so much stuff and it's just like, you know, like they've lost it. Oh, you know, like they lose a job or I'll go get another job. Not like, oh, why did I lose that job? I need to find out.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no... I can't think that the it's like ambition. Like there's no ambition in people.
There's inner
no
fortitude.
Drive. Yeah.
There's such a lack of inner fortitude, and I don't want to be the old guy who says it wasn't like the way I was when I was a younger kid, but I mean I talk to my kid and she tells me these stories about like some of the kids in her school and it's just like these are like soft kids. These are super super soft kids, and the thing is like I never was one of these dads who just lectured my kid all the time. She saw me coming home covered in she saw me when I was working in a metal shop. Probably one of the most embarrassing moments of being a parent, and her she didn't think of that, was her school was closed because of a hurricane and there was power outage for a week. So my boss, I was working in a metal shop, and it was a grimy, disgusting metal shop with a disgusting break room. And he said, well, I don't, you know, just bring her here. We have Wi-Fi. She can hang out here. She can do her homework and use the Wi-Fi here. So she was probably like 6 or 7, and she spent the week at my shop with dudes who didn't speak English, and they were not, you know, they were, you know, really nice to her, but they were a little scary, and the shop was a fucking mess, and she saw me how hard I was working, and she knew my boss, but it wasn't like a friendly atmosphere. And she said to me later in life, I said to her that how embarrassed I was later in life, because it's just like, you know, you deserve better than just sitting in this break room with like lockers and no light. And, you know, and she says, it really showed me how hard you work. And it was really like, you know, I see mom working on Saturdays and she's working in a really tough clinic. And she spent a week with me, you know, having lunch and I'm covered in dirt. And, you know, it was really like it was an eye opener for her that there are, you know, that there are people actually working in order to kind of make people, you know, make money for your family.
It's just stuff what people don't see in it. Like people don't see everything that happens behind closed doors. They don't see all the
but it was beneficial to her. It was beneficial to her because she realized that, like, she realized that my wife and I were sacrificing for her, and she never took that for granted. And I'm very grateful for that because it's just like, you know, you see kids now, and there's so many kids. You know, have you ever heard of this expression, bed rotting? This is like a new expression. Maybe it's not that new, but it's kids lying in their bed all day long and just scrolling. It's called rotting. And these kids are saying, what are you going to do today? I'm just going to rot in my bed. Rotting.
True. I mean, it's just there's no ambition. Like that. I keep saying to my kids, like when I was your age, we didn't have computers. Like we were like, I think I've mentioned it before, but when I was a kid, like we were a scruffy family. Like we didn't have any money. Like we were like on the street where we lived, like, we had no TV, you know. Like a few other people had TVs, but TVs were expensive. A TV license were more expensive. We sort of had nothing. So to like have fun, we'd go out and play, or my mum would save up some money and buy some cooking stuff and cook us make us cookies and biscuits and stuff like that. But you know, like, so we were always active. So like if you just stayed in your bedroom, there'd be nothing to do because we didn't have computers, we didn't have TVs right. in our bedroom. So like, what would you do? You'd just be twiddling your thumbs. So you'd be out and active and doing stuff. And when I see these, you know, like, the other day I took some extra days off work because they were off school for extra after the 6 weeks holidays. And I said to them on the Monday, I said, like, what do you want to do? I said, like, we could go, like, to the Eden camp, which is, like, a war museum. I said, oh, we can go and visit, like, a castle. And they said, oh, can't we just play on our Switches? And I was just like, no. Like, if I'm taking a day off work, then we're going out and doing something. Like, just playing on your Switches. So just want to sit there and play on the computers. And the eldest, he's like that, though. He won't move out of bed. He'll just lay on his bed watching TV or playing on his Switch from his bed like a mummy, I suppose, just laying there.
But that's like a thing, though. That whole concept is, and these psychiatrists are saying, or so these therapists or whatever, they're saying that the youth culture are using this as a way to kind of decompress from all the stresses they have in their lives. So they do this thing, and they're not embarrassed by calling it rotting. And actually, speaking of which, what you were talking about, I had Ben Kimon on here not too long ago, and he was saying that there's a German word, I don't remember what it is, that, you know, it's basically the concept of parents taking their kids to do something, even if they don't want to do it. they're going to go for a hike, or they're going to do something, even maybe they don't want to do it, but they're going to learn something from it. Yeah. And it's the concept of just going to do things to learn about things, even if you don't want to do it.
Well, weirdly, like we went on holiday not long ago. We've got a caravan and we went to Lake District, which is like I suppose like a national park, what you have over there. And we went there and we stayed there for over a week. And the kids, they didn't ask for the computers. They were out every single day. We'd open the caravan door. They'd go play football. They'd play out with a dog. We were going out walking nearly every day. And they just didn't care about it. And then as soon as you come home, it's sort of like the home setting, you know, like the routine of home. And It's strange because we do like to try and get them out. Like while they were off on holidays, we've taken them to castles, we've taken them hiking, and we, you know, we take them all over the place. But yeah, it's strange, and it's sort of like the games they play as well are pretty mind numbing. In fact, they have a game called Roblox, and what they'll do is they both sit next to each other. Then the both on the game will get a car, then drive each other around in the car, or they have a house and visit each other in their house on the game while sitting next to each other. And I'm just like, why don't you just do that? But in real life, it's such a weird.
You know what? I know somebody who's got a kid who they like watching videos of people playing video games.
Yeah, these do that as well, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
It's weird, isn't
That's
it?
Legitimately, like, unbelievable. I'm amazed. I'm totally amazed by that. But, you know, I'm also very lucky because my kid is, she's much more like her mother in the sense of she's always kind of doing stuff. She's doing internships and she's got friends and she makes arrangements to do things. And she's not really a big social media person. Like, she gave up TikTok during the pandemic because she felt like, she said to me one day, she says, I found myself on the TikTok for 6 hours. And I was so mortified that I just cut the app loose. And then she was like 16 or 17. She's like, I was so embarrassed that I was on this fucking app for 6 hours. I had to cut it loose.
Yeah, it does. That's a weird thing about social media, isn't it? Like, I've been trying to avoid, like, the people have probably noticed, like, on my Instagram, I haven't been posting as many stories because I try not to go on it now, because when I do, I'll go post a story and then I'm scrolling, and then you're just looking, you're like, bloody hell, like 20 minutes has gone by. What have I even? And I've been doing nothing. Like, my mind, you know, like your mind just disappears. You'll see one video you like, and then that's it. It's sort of like a drug, so to speak, isn't it? Because you watch that video, then you scroll. Where you could, you know, like any norm, you know, like you watch a film in how you, if you put a film on, you're not going to put another film on straight away. You'd watch that film, you'd stop and go do something else. But social media's just got that thing where it just. So I have been trying to avoid, well, not avoid it, but trying to control it, so to speak. And it definitely frees up a lot more time. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I don't have time. But if they went on the phone and look at the hours that they've put into, you know, like it literally says on the iPhones, your time usage, and a lot of it's social media. And you work it out over the week. And I think I worked it out, and it was like, I think it was like 18 hours a week, and I thought, like, that's nearly a day. So then I thought, I need to stop this. I need to stop doing it.
The crazy part about I don't have enough time is I'm training for the New York City Marathon, and my Wednesdays are my hardest day because I have to get in, like this week I have to get 8 miles in. Now you think to yourself, 8 miles isn't the end of the world, but I can't run in the evening because I'm just too tired. After a day of work, I ain't going to run to eight hours. It's going to get hot. I want to go to bed. So I'm going to do the 8 miles before I go to the shop. So in order to do these 8 miles, I realized that I got to wake up. Last week I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I got out the door at 5, just because you got to take a shit before you've got to clean out before you run, you know. Yeah. If you don't clean out before you're running, it's a disaster area. You feel terrible, and you just don't feel good. So I got to get out the door by 5, and then my pace is faster because I know I got to get to work because I got guys here. And it's like you realize there's always time. It's just a question of desire.
Yeah, and it's fitting it in like that. That's like what I say about the grappling. Like, there's a gym. It's 45 minutes away from me, but they do a really early session on a Monday for all the people who go to work. And I think I get up at 4:30, and I set off at 5 to get there for 6 o'clock. It goes to 7, and then I finish at 7, drive home, and I'm home for 8 o'clock, so I'm basically home, ready for the kids to take the kids to school. And then I've got the rest of my day. So, like, they do that on a Monday, and it's perfect, because Mondays are probably my quietest day, because there's no real sessions anywhere else on a Monday. So it's like, well, that's perfect, then. I've now got a session on a Monday, and I've got no excuses. And it also, because I do that on a Monday, if I was gonna train on a Tuesday but I can't go there because I'm busy at work, then I've already sort of cleared that off. I've done my grappling training for at least a couple of days. So it's finding something and fitting something in. It's especially like grappling, because obviously you can't just do that on your own. Like a run, like you say, a run, you can't. You need to time the run. You need the time for the run. It's not just like a basic thing, but you can fit it in. People will all say that they can't fit it in, but you've just proved that you can fit it in. You just have to get up earlier. People just don't want to get up earlier. That's
no, it's actually, we're getting to the point that my wife is very like, she's starting to get worried. Is not, I think worried would be what's below worried. Yeah, that would be the word I would express. My wife is, because I did 16 miles on Saturday, and when I got home, and I was hydrating, I got water, and I got the hydration stuff, and I hydrate the night before, and I hydrate the morning of, and I'm really like very conscious of it. And I started to feel like on Saturday when I got done after 16 miles, I started to have this. I was cold in the house, and I put my sweatshirt on, and I felt like I was explaining to my wife, like I felt like I had a cold almost. And she said that's rhabdo. You know about rhabdo? Rhabdo, something or other. You know that? It's a thing with your kidneys starting to shut down.
Yeah, and I think they call it runner's flu, don't they? I'm sure it's called runner's flu or something.
Right,
like that.
Something like that. But I mean, it's also like a kidney situation. And she said there are levels to it, where your body is just like trying to recover. Your muscles are fine, but your body deals with a lot of stuff too. Your intestines and your colon and your liver and all that stuff, that's working too while you're running. So she's very concerned. I'm fine. Everything's fine. It'll be all right. But at the same time, like at my age, 51, about to be 52, it's like I feel as though it's important that if you don't lose it, if you don't use it, you'll lose it. Yeah. And I don't want to be at a certain age where I thought, well, I could have done this, but I didn't. And, I don't know. I don't think people realize that there is no heaven and this is heaven, and you got to do it now. You got to make it right now, because there ain't no second chance.
Well, exactly. You've got one life, and that's it. Like that. I said this to someone the other day, and I said, like, some people are going to get to the end. Oh, in fact, I said it about the people who all they do is just sit online and they complain about everything. I said they're going to get to the end of their life, or even just people who are just so pent up and just obsessed with politics. Like, everyone just makes everything about politics, even if it's just nothing to do with it. And they're going to get to the end of their life. And you're like, even if there was, like, let's say just for the purpose of this, you are sat there in front of God, if you believe in God, and he shows you a video of your life, and then you watch that
And you're rotting in bed.
Yeah, you're rotting in bed. You're fucking sitting online telling people that the work's shit. You know, like you're accusing people of all sorts of political stuff, even though that they don't even live in the same country as you. And it's just like, did you enjoy that? Or did this guy who's getting up every day, going for a run, you're like maximizing his life. You know, like you're maximizing it. You sort of, that's the best thing. The best and worst thing about running is you're like, it will make your life longer because runs, when you go on a 2-hour run, that 2 hours feels like 5 weeks. So you've right. now maximized your life by 5 weeks.
It's true.
You want it to be fucking over and it's never ending. You're just like, fuck, there's still 2 hours left. And I've been running for 2 seconds.
I will say that when I was younger, I used to get the runner's high. I do not get the runner's high anymore, and I'm running better than I ever have. Like I'm grateful that I spent 5 years on the Peloton before I started training for the marathon, because I had real knee problems the first time I did the marathon, and I know exactly where the knee problems were. I knew exactly when they'd come in, and they'd hit around mile 13, and it was a very, very excruciating, very pinpoint pain that I could feel coming on. And now I feel as though, because I did the Peloton, I really maximized all the other muscles around my knees, and I'm much, much better. But the other thing is you're 100% right. It's just madness. And funny enough, you were talking about people on the internet. You know, this past week has been like, you know, number of years, I'm amazed that, you know, we talk about kids rotting in bed. I'm amazed that grown adults who spend the time that they do on Facebook. Facebook is like legitimately, it might as well be the AARP. It might as well be the old geezers. It's all the old geezers.
Yeah.
I'm stupefied at people who, you know, you and I use social media for money. I mean, our directions are a little different. I mean, my job is to get people to see what I'm doing and then get them to the website, to the point where with my website, I can see the times people are on the website browsing, and it correlates to when I post about work or stories or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, you cannot hide the fact that social media is an avenue for my business. And same thing with you. You do these incredible videos of restorations or knife builds, or all your videos are always fun. They're always exciting. They're always really interesting. I love watching you do, you know, even gluing handles up, but watching you, the way you do all your different procedures. And I think to myself, oh, wow, that's different than I would do it, but that's a really cool way to do it. I'm always watching and enjoying it. It's an avenue for you because, you know, you get your people buy your stuff, and then also you have, you know, deals, whatever deals you have with the social media. I've been watching guys the past couple days just espousing and spending their time arguing with people for nothing, except to feed their own bizarre narcissism.
It's like a narcissism pandemic in it. Like it's,
yeah.
It's. I feel like, do you know? I feel like the word narcissism is an understatement as well. Like it's like the need to come up with a new word meaning narcissism, but like a deeper meaning for it. And it's so ingrained in people now. Like people just posting videos just for the attention, like for nothing. Do you know? I actually think that TikTok is mildly to blame for it, because it gave everyone that sort of popularity contest, you know, like you'd see in, it was never like that in my schools, but like when we watch like an American film about school, there's like a popularity thing, you know, like I can't think of any other films right now, but it's like that, you know, like people,
yeah, I know what you're saying.
They got like that thing, like, oh, I'm popular now because I've got so many followers on, because it was so easy for them, though. It was given to them easily for dumb shit, like through the pandemic, and then that's the offshoot. And like I saw a rise in the way people are from that, just in even just people that I know, like in the small groups of people that I know. And then it's just spread worldwide now. Everyone's got an opinion on everything. Everyone wants you to know their opinion on everything,
right.
whether you care or not, you know, like it's fucking hell. Just shut your fucking mouth.
It's just wild, because it's like on both sides.
Yeah.
It's like guys are they're planting the flag of their own virtue. You know, they're telling you, they're, you know, when you're a good person, you don't need to tell people you're a good person. talk is cheap. When you do something, you do something right, and you don't have to make a federal case about it. But everybody is like, just like, they're ripping their shirt open to show everybody the S on their chest. Yeah. These are the I want you to know that you're witnessing a man of God. I'm a godly guy. You know, it's bananas. And it's like, there was this one thing this past week, and I noticed all these guys were saying, you know, the pride of, I just lost 200 followers, and I'm, and it was like this, well, why do you have to say anything?
Yeah.
Nobody cares. It's bizarre. I'm totally like, I couldn't stop. My wife was just like, what are you doing? I'm like, look at this guy from high school. He's fighting other people about a difference of opinion. And they're just both like, they're saying the same shit that they've heard from other people. There's no nuance. There's no meeting of the minds. This is like just pulling each other's dicks and stuff. It's just so bizarre.
You know what? Like, I actually, weirdly, like, I've been stewing. That this is the thing. This is another thing about running. When you're running, you've just got your mind to yourself. And I've been stewing right. on so much stuff while I've been running. And one thing was like, where the Ukrainian girl got killed, and it was like right. that. I watched that video, and I said on the podcast the other day when me and Chris did one, and I genuinely said, like, I've seen so much chaos in my life. I've seen people die like in front of me, and that is probably the worst video. And that video is one of them where that proves that people need to fucking change, like, no matter what. It's not, you know, like, the left and the right are both the fucking same. Like, they're the right. same. If they both actually just sat down and spoke to each other, they're both the fucking same, because they're both wild fucking morons. And it's no longer about left and right anymore. It's about good and evil. And that's what we should be looking at, good and fucking evil. When there's an innocent woman who's just sitting there minding her own business, like, no colour of skin, no nothing. Like, it don't fucking matter. There's a woman, and the look on her face when that guy, I don't know if you've seen it. Like,
I've seen parts of it, yeah.
I've seen the full uncut thing, like every single bit of it, from getting on it to the fucking, to when people actually get up and do something about it. But just the look on her face when he does what he does, and she turns around, and just the look of innocence. Like, I had a full thing written out about it, and I thought, actually, I'm not getting involved in it, because it's too much of a cesspit of shit. And other people are going to say stuff to me, and I couldn't give a fuck if they disagree with me or not. It's the face of innocence, and this is the problem. And the left and the right will try and use it as a fucking weapon. It's not a fucking weapon. It's innocent fucking people. Like, people who are asking for fuck all. Like, they just want to, like, you know, like me, like yourself, we just go about our daily business. We're innocent people, but then these crazy fucking lunatics from either side are dragging people into the shit for no reason, and I think, it's not really changed my outlook on life, but it's proved to me like that something needs to change, and I think a lot of people have sort of woken up from it as well by just seeing that. Like, even Emma, like, I said to Emma not to watch it, but she did end up watching it. But she was just like, she said it's just her face when she just turned around, and you can just see innocence there, and it's just it's horrible, you know. Like, it's a real weird feeling, especially like I'm a guy, like, I've got borderline personality disorder, so I don't really feel fuck all. And like I say, I've seen people die. I watch murder documentaries. I watch people die all the time. Like, it's weird and it's macabre, but it interests me. Like, I don't like seeing it. I'm interested in seeing it. Like, I suppose it goes down to the fact that of everything that happened while I was in Afghan, I suppose. So, like, when I watch stuff, I have no, literally have no feeling. Like, I always say, like, it doesn't actually bother me to watch it, but that was one of them videos where I watched it and I was like, fucking hell. Like, I actually, like, I felt horrible for it. And I didn't sleep properly the night after I watched it as well, because I kept thinking about it. Like, it's just the look on her face, and it's strange. It's such a fucking, and then it's just like, what the fuck are we doing this for? Like, what is this for? To disagree with people? For what? Just live your life. Like I say, when you get to the end of your life and you sat there watching it on video, are you going to be pleased with this, that you sat online arguing with a guy about some bullshit? No. Fucking spend time with your kids. Go do shit. Go fucking, like, work. Fucking go for a run or something. Just do something other than fucking argue with people.
When you were on, the first time you were on, we had a really interesting conversation. You talked about, if you look into the archives, Honor's on in the beginning, and he told his... just incredible stories of you in the when you were in the military, and then the horror that you saw. How do you think that those instances just changed who you are now?
I actually said this to someone not long ago, and I said the person that I was before that, I don't think I'd get on with. Like, I don't think I'd like the guy. Like, I genuinely think, like, it opened my eyes to a lot of shit. Like, and this is the thing which I've actually, I don't know if I said it to Emma or I said it to someone else earlier on. I'm seeing similarities now in when we were in Afghanistan and this, you know, like the way it's there essentially, it's just left versus right. You know, like the Taliban, I don't know what side they'd be on, but, you know, one, it's just believing in bullshit and arguing over bullshit, trying to kill people over bullshit. Like, what the f- why? We humans, we get one life. What? Why would you risk your fucking life? Like, people act like a life is nothing. They just don't. People don't value life, and I suppose it goes on to people not valuing time either. Like, everything just, it needs to be, people need to understand that, like, life is, and that, I mean, I don't mean to go too political, but with this whole chaos that's happened anyway, people are, like, berating a guy who was killed. But then, like, I said on the podcast, I said, it's not just one person's life that's gone. He's got family, he's got kids, and then he's got friends, and he's got supporters. And then it's not just that side. It's the guy who shot him. He's got family, he's got friends, he's got supporters. So it's not just two people's lives who were ruined. It's probably thousands. Not right. only that, but people who were there and watched it. Like, I've been there, and I've seen people die, and I know how that affects people. So people are going to be dying from that. There's PTSD from that. And it's not only that, we now live in a soft generation where people will see that video, and I've seen the video, and it's a fucking brutal video.
You mean the assassination of Charlie Kirk?
And it's right. It felt weird, and I realized the other day that it's because it's the only sort of time in modern times that someone's been assassinated, like, and it's in 4K, it's in fucking 5K, and people have seen that, like, people, it's everywhere. So it's like, it's there, this is your, like, it's in your time. That's going to affect people. Like, that, like, watching that video, people are going to see that video, and that's going to, it's, people are going to get PTSD from watching the video. So
yeah.
It ain't just one person who's dead. There's probably going to be lots of people who are dying from that. The same as, like, anything, you know, like, the fallout of any sort of situation, you know, if just someone, you know, like, your friend dies of a drug overdose, it affects more than just that friend of a drug overdose. It affects his family, it affects, you know, like, friends, and just, it's, but people who are so self-centered and, you know, like, the main character syndrome, they don't see it for how it is, that there's a lot more just one person's life at stake. It's a lot of people's lives, it's mental health, it's, you know, like, there's so much, we now live in the future where we know about mental health. Why are we not looking at it like, actually, yeah, this isn't just a person dying. This is a mental health fucking pandemic, so to speak. You know, like, people, I think Danny Mitchell shared a thing earlier on saying, like, I think it's like 32 people a day commit suicide, 32 men a day commit suicide. And it's like, why is no one talking about this shit? You know, like, everyone's arguing about this one guy, but why are we not looking about the bigger picture? What about the people who were there, witnessed it? What about how they feel right now? Is anyone checking on them? Does anyone know? You know, this is a problem, I think, with politics and left and right. Like I say, it's not left and right. It should be good versus evil. And we are humans, and it's in it. It's being humane in it. Like, let's fucking look after each other. But nah, everyone would, like you say, virtue signal and say they care about someone. But when it comes down to it, are they really caring about people?
I was listening to someone talk about war, and it was Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, and former wrestler, and he had a bit of a crackpot. Some of the things that he says I have no interest in, and I think that's the most important thing, that you can listen to someone and then decide, you know, I like this that he said, I don't like this that he said, and I think that that's the biggest issue, is we hang on to all the things that everybody says, regardless. He said that war is the failure of politicians. War is an act of failure. And that diplomacy it's the failure that should be held responsible by the politicians. And I thought that was really interesting, because it was the whole idea of, like, you couldn't work this out. You couldn't figure this out. You weren't smart enough, nor talented enough, nor both sides couldn't work it out. And it's the idea of fighting like this is it's the failure of politicians.
And
you can't figure out a way to negotiate.
And also in that as well, like that's another thing what I have sort of a bee in my bonnet about, well, regarding this whole thing, you know, like people are quick to, Russia's at war, like because of everything's to do with politics. And like you say, it's a failure of politics, but everyone's like calling Russia this and that. But what about the people who are in Russia who don't want to be at fucking war? Like
yeah.
There's people, and this is the problem. Like, we're not talking about that because people are too busy saying Russia are bad, Russia are good. You know, they're arguing about who's bad and who's good. And it's like, well, what about the, like a prime example actually would be like during obviously the World War, when at Christmas they stopped and played football. Then the very right. next day they started shooting each other. They didn't want to be at fucking war. It was just politicians fucking arguing about bullshit. If you know what I mean? It's fucking crazy, really. Like, if you put it like sort of, you're taking it obviously back to bare bones and into a basic thing. Like, humans, really, we should just be like, no, actually, we're just not going to do that because it's fucking not human.
Well, here's the weirdest thing is that the internet and social media have given everyone this false sense of competence.
Yeah.
And you can learn, and there's a lot of great things, but I learned how to tile a wall so I could redo. I learned how to build. Redo my kitchen watching YouTube videos. But that doesn't mean I'm now a professional contractor. You know what I mean? And I feel as though that there's a lot of examples of people learning something on the internet and then they're given this false sense of competency.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest issue. Is the weirdest part is I've been seeing all these fights online. A lot of it has to do with the Charlie Kirk situation, which, you know, it's bad. Assassination is terrible.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, we said enough. I mean, it's terrible that there's, and you see these people arguing and there's no sense that there's going to be a resolution in the conversation. It's not a conversation. It's 100%. It's fighting with no sense of there being anything other than my job is to humiliate you. My job in this conversation is to make you look stupid. My job isn't for us to meet in the middle and decide, you know, maybe we can work together. It's my job is to make you look like a terrible human being and, you know, block somebody and all this bullshit. I couldn't get over, frankly, I really could not get over how self-righteous and self-indulgent people were on a subject that they really had very little experience in.
Yeah,
I was shocked, frankly. But at the same time, you know, you and I talk about this all the time. When you post the things that people write, now if you're listening to this, you don't follow Dies in Every Film on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, you're crazy. He does these amazing videos. Honor does these amazing videos. And people write crazy things to you. But you're the king. You are the king of taking the criticism and then posting it and like using it for more content. Nobody did that before you did. I'm telling you, you're the Christopher Columbus of double timing you're the Christopher Columbus of two timing your double jeopardy on your content.
Yeah, I quite.
And I can't believe the things that people say to you. I say these things. When I read what the things that you post that people say, I just write to you. I'm like, I can't believe it. And I've been saying that to you for fucking 5 years. I can't believe they're still doing this. It's just never, it never ceases to surprise me.
Yeah, to be fair, I always think every single time, I think surely it's not going to get any worse than this. And then it just gets worse. Like I've actually had, which is weirdly, in the past few months now, I've had people on Instagram when I post it, people are then criticizing me for criticizing someone else, like they don't get it, but then they don't seem to like. I'm saying to them like, but yeah, you're now like they start swearing at me and calling me all sorts of names, and I'm like, but now you're being a hypocrite because you're calling me all these names and saying I'm bad, but you know what I mean. But all I'm doing is I'm joking. Like I don't really care about these people. I say it as a joke. You know, like it doesn't. I'm not getting mad. They're getting mad because I joke, and the you know, like you say, they like to try and put you down and try and humiliate you. And I can't be humiliated. I'll humiliate myself more than anyone can humiliate me. It don't fucking bother me in the slightest. but then other people like inboxing me and fucking try to like, you know, like, oh, you shouldn't be speaking to people like this. You're just a piece of shit. Well, I'm a piece of shit. Look at what the guy said to me. Like, fucking hell, I'm
people
a piece
in
of shit.
People inbox you to tell you that you shouldn't be writing the things that you're writing.
Yeah,
that surprises me. Like, why? I don't have the time to get into a debate or conversation online. Man, I'm too busy. I can't get involved with these things. I would never say anything other than support. I don't. That's to me. I've only used social media to be supportive, and that's it. I don't want to have a conversation where I have to defend myself now.
It's like you say, though. People are just too—they're just too comfortable out there. They're sitting there. They're fucking—they're hiding behind a screen. I don't know. We've said it before, but it's sort of like they're not happy with their own life, so they don't want anyone else to be happy. You know, like, there's some inherent fucking problem somewhere. You've got like the narcissist type people who they want to be right, and that's it. Like they don't have a clue about it. The Damascus debate is the fucking massive one with a lot of them. They don't have a clue about it, but they'll try and fucking make out that they're right. And then obviously you've got the other lot who they just hate their lives, so they'll, like a lot of people like to, I did the meme video like saying where I was forging in my pants, and I think it was like, you can't forge, you can't weld, you are gay or something like that. Oh no, you're gay, you've got a small dick. And then in the next one I said, I didn't say my dick was big, you know, like as a joke. And because so many people say that shit to me, like it's weird that people will just genuinely say that I've got a small dick over a random video of me making something, and it's so weird. Or they'll call me gay because like I had the little snippets of me in my pants in there just as a joke. Like it comes from Fight Club when he adds the sex scenes in. Obviously, we can't add sex scenes in there because it's social media. So I had the pictures of me in my pants. You know, I was like,
it came from. I never knew realized where that had a direct place.
Yeah, I'm sure it's Fight Club, isn't it? Where Tyler Durden, he adds like the little snippets of sex scenes, and it's where people, and he says, you know, like people they won't know whether they've seen it or not because it's so fast.
Subliminal messaging.
Yeah, so I did that like
just fantastic.
A joke, and obviously it's been pretty popular. And then people call me gay. People call me bit gay because I put a picture of me in my pants, and it's like
That means
we'd all be gay at least twice a day, because I mean I get undressed before I get in bed. I mean, I'm naked sometimes. Does that like, is that super gay or what? I need to check the rules on gayness.
I will tell you one of my favorite ones that you've done. I watched it so many times because it was so funny. Is where the light switch is the mouth, and then you get up onto the stool, and then you know off screen. It's the idea is you're sticking your dick in the light switch. That might have been one of my favorite of all. I might have watched that 10 times. I think I sent it around. I was just like, I sent it to Ben. I was just like, and then your hair, you know, the explosion, and then there's the skeleton. That was one of the funniest things I've seen. It was short, and it was hilarious.
Did you know what?
I don't know why people don't think that. I don't think why people even bother. That was hilarious.
I saw the weird little thing, and it was that, you know, like the light switch, and I seen it, and I thought, I know what to fucking do with that. As soon as I seen it, I thought it was weird anyway. I was like watching like, what the fuck is this? But then my mom was like, you know what to fucking do with this.
That was legitimately like, that was like almost pure, perfect short film. That was like, there was a artistic direction in that whole thing. Even just, and the funny part is you're making a joke about your height. So you got to get on a stool,
yeah,
to put your dick in the light switch. And then that was without question one of my favorite ones. I thought that was really hilarious.
To be fair, I've got a few other ideas with a few other things. I've got so many like video ideas and stuff saved that I need to post. It's just, every day I go, like, I need to do that, and then the day is gone because I'm doing whatever knives out of, and like, fuck, I forgot to do them fucking shorts. But I've got a few that I've pre-made a load saved, and then I need to put like just get them posted.
Have you noticed the? I mean, I know that like how has business been? I've talked to a lot of people in regards to tariffs and all that. How has your knife business been? It's been tough.
It was tough for a bit, and it's picked up again now. The problem that I had was for 2 years, my social media, which obviously you know, because I think we've spoke about it a few times, social media sort of had this fucking, all knife makers are bad, and they're, you know, restricted. I've had restrictions on my account for 2 years, and that saw me go from 123,000 followers down to 113,000 followers. So I lost. No, it was 111,000. So it dropped, like, and it was just constantly dropping, like, and none of my posts were doing well, which, if you don't post, don't do well, people aren't seeing it. I won't see them. Even my website was, like, you know, like, where it's, like, every month I'll get a thing from my website that say that your viewing is so many thousand views this month or whatever. This is minus 300% your regular, and you're like, fucking hell. So, like, it had been a big low, but in fairness, like, I have been picking up orders, like, in the past 3 or 4 months, and then I have seen an upspike in my, like, I'm back up to, I think, 123,000 followers now from a few of those, like you say, that post, what I did with a chair and a few other posts, which have done pretty well, and which has also sort of seen a spike in sales, but it's still hit and miss, like, I'm still not, like, where I'd want to be, you know, like before it was always like, before I'd be like 8, 9, 10 months in advance, whereas now I'm probably 3 months in advance, and it's, you know, you get to the end and you're like, fuck, and then maybe one order will come in and then you're like, fuck, oh, fucking hell, that's one more month, or, well, a couple more weeks tied over, but yeah, it's not like it was pre-pandemic, pre-fucking entering the Matrix or whatever. The
pandemic was like a golden age. I mean, yes. that was like money in the bank. That was like fish in the barrel. Anything can go in a box, go to the post office, fish in a barrel.
It was fucking perfect, that. No, like, I was allowed to work because I worked on my own, like most people weren't allowed to work. The roads were quiet, so when I got to work, and I left work, there was no one about. It was perfect, and then every fucker wanted a knife. It was amazing.
But I mean, most of your customers, I know with a lot of your builds, a lot of your customers are from the United States.
Yeah.
Are the tariffs affecting it? I know the Royal Mail is pausing shipping United States.
I use UPS and I've not noticed any tariffs from sending out. But to be fair, I try and send it out and say that it's like, I won't say that it's like a sale. I'll mark it and gift. I'll insure it, and then I'll send it out just as sort of like a personal thing. I don't know if that's against
them. Oh, so you haven't noticed people are, like, you know, freaking out about paying 50% tariffs or whatever it is?
No, but I think we've got the lowest tariff out of everyone with yourselves. I'm sure. Is it like 5% or 10%? I'm sure. They met together and kissed each other and whatever, and then organized the lowest tariffs.
A lot of EU and a lot of Sweden. I know because we're having steel issues. It's Sweden and Germany, it's 50% tariff.
Yeah, they've all got. I know that all the EU are like, they're definitely higher than us, but obviously Trump's got like he's got a golf club in Scotland.
Isn't that unbelievable? Is that unbelievable? I mean, Jesus Christ, you can't make it up. He can't make it up.
He likes British people or something. I'm sure he did a thing when he came to England and he met Keir Starmer and he said, I like the British people or whatever he says.
Oh, what a that's unbelievable. What was he going to say? So are you still enjoying? I know that a couple months ago you decided that you weren't going to do long form YouTube videos. Are you still there yet? Or
to be fair, when I sat down in front of this laptop, because I rarely use it now, I've actually got 3 videos fully filmed, and I upload my shorts now, so the money wasn't earning me enough doing the videos, and in fairness, I'm actually earning more now I've stopped because I can do more work than when I was doing the videos, and it's just an ease, you know, like before I'd work 4 videos or 5 videos in advance just in case I had like weeks off or I was away or whatever. And then I'm posting every other Saturday so that it gets it. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I need to edit. I need to do this. And it's just easier coming home and not having to worry about editing videos. Like I say, these 3 long form videos, I haven't even edited them yet. I'll pop them up at some point. But I keep my channel ticking over by putting the shorts up, which to be fair, a lot of the shorts have been doing more popular than my long format stuff. The earnings aren't as good, but then I'm earning from Facebook, so, and Facebook earnings are loads better than YouTube, which is sort of the main reason for sort of like canning it, because I thought, if I can do short form stuff, which, like, I mean, you know, like you say, that video where the light switch, where I put my dick in the light switch, It literally took me about five.
Just saying, just explaining that with a straight face is hilarious. You were talking business, and you're like, you know that video I stuck my dick in the light switch?
Yeah.
All right, back to data. Let's talk about the data now.
It literally took me about 5 or 10 minutes to film, whereas like if I was going to do long form, it takes me weeks and weeks because it's like doing the bits. Then there's the editing when I get home, but that one, like I edited in no time because the snippets are so easy to edit because I know what I'm filming. You know, like, I know the bits that I'm doing, and it's a lot quicker. And I mean, I think that earned me quite a bit of money when it was on Facebook as well. So it makes more sense for me to do the short form, and I can do more of it than just doing long form. Like I said,
do you still enjoy it? Like I feel like dicking the light switch was a fun job. Versus, you know, recently I always see what you're doing on Facebook, and they'll play some old stuff too, and I'll see like when you rehab that World War One helmet and stuff like that. Those great old ones. I like seeing the old ones. See that, you know, you're a little bit younger and you're kind of more serious, and you're not doing as much you know in the nude.
Yeah.
But do you still enjoy doing them?
Yeah, especially
like dicking the light switch has got to be your like fun for you. That's got to be like, this is like where I want to be.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, like I've been saying to people, like weirdly, the lulling, like before when I was posting videos, like I'd put so much effort into the videos, like even the short form stuff, like say on Instagram, and I'd never want to post a video in case it did shit. So I'd be like, ooh, I'll edit this, and I'd be putting so much effort into it. And then because it was like 2 years of just chaos, everything was just like every post doing shit. So I just started posting whatever, like I post stuff on my training and stuff like that. And it's got to a point now where I'm just not bothered. And actually, it's been working out better for me because I'm posting more stuff it's more just me than anything else. And like rather than using it just as a knife platform, it's more like my own personal, well, not my own personal page, but more of you're getting to know me more. Like there's knives on there, but then it's, you know, I like to fuck around, I like to mess around, I don't take anything seriously, and everyone could see that for what it is. And I think it makes it more personal for people, you know, especially like a few of the customers I've got when I'm speaking to them, and that they're like, oh, I've had knives before, and people just aren't like this. And I'm like, well, I like to get everything right. Like I like to, you know, even though they're like, oh, well, just do what you want. Like, I'll do what I want, but I want to check with you, and you know? I want to run stuff past you. I don't want to get to end and go, oh, actually, I don't fucking like that colour or whatever. So it's, you know, like, people are... So I suppose they sort of see it like a friendly situation rather than just a guy who's trying to sell me a knife. And...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's I've had to struggle with the whole thing. I remember when the whole Instagram and Meta just giving knife makers a hard time, and I still have the orange dot, you know, regardless, the orange dot of can't be recommended. I've never not had it, and I've had to just try to figure out different ways in which to kind of, you know, do things. I was doing the throwing things at the magical anvil, and it was kind of transforming in mid-flight and all that stuff. And even now I'm finding myself doing these funny little stupid things, but they get great views. Like the views are great compared to if I just do a straight thing about knives.
Yeah.
But it's this strange situation where I had Aaron Goff on last week, and we were talking about it because he's besides the fact he's just an awesome knife maker, he's a very, very high ranking software engineer. Like that's what he does for his day job. He's very, very, he understands AI, he understands all this stuff. And he said, well, there's this, you know, we were talking about that, you know, likes don't matter anymore. Everything, the new currency is engagement. It's just views.
Views.
And he was saying that because of the way that is, there's people. He refers to it as a perverse incentive. When we're saying perverse, he's not just saying dick in the light switch. He's just saying anything that would grab your attention.
Yeah.
As opposed to something of interest. You know, it's just like these attention grabbing things, or he would refer to as the perverse incentive to keep doing these, you know, like jackass, like all I do, Ben Snoor and I send each other probably, I would say 10 to 15 memes or 10 to 15 reels to each other. And it's all, I love the lumberjacks where they're cutting the trees and they're falling in the house, or somebody getting kicked in the balls, or somebody falling off a skateboard, or somebody doing the scorpion, you know, the scorpion where you fall and then your legs go up over your head. That's called the scorpion. We're sending that shit to each other, bulls bucking people off and people getting kicked in the stomach. That's all we send. That's all we send each other. And we laugh. It's hilarious. But it is totally perverse incentive.
Yeah.
It's no way to run a business.
Yeah, it's not very business. Not very business friendly. That sort of like way of doing it, is it?
Oh, it's embarrassing. But then at the same time, it's just like, well, I see the engagement. If I do like I did a meme where I was trying to make do like Robert De Niro from Goodfellas, where he's looking from the bar. It did like really good. It did really good, and I'm just like, you know. And then I try to sell some knives, and then it's like, yeah, it's okay, but it doesn't send people to the website like, you know, doing something stupid.
Yeah. To be fair, like, I've noticed that, as I was saying to, I think I said it to Chris on the podcast last week, is that if I post the funny, jokey ones, they do real well. But even now, when I'm posting the knife ones, it's sort of like there's a sort of still a shadow ban on my knives. I haven't got that. My account's not restricted anymore, but when I post the knife stuff, the last one that I posted, I think, was on Tuesday or Thursday. And when I looked at the analytics for the first hour, I don't get any likes. And then after that, the likes start coming in. But then by the time it starts moving, it's too fucking late. And like, and it's like, well, not even likes, just interactions, like no interactions for an hour. So it's sort of like it was sat there in the shadow realm, not getting shown to anyone, and then it'll go up there. So no one's, the people that I need to see it aren't really seeing it, you know, when I'm advertising stuff, which, like I say, that's what slows everything down, because we are using it like an advertising platform. Like,
yeah,
we want people 100%. To see our shit so that they'll buy our shit. Like, this is the thing as well, you know, like, originally when I first got the flags, I spoke to Instagram, and they kept saying to me, have you tried paying for advertising? I'm like, I'm not paying for something when I'm not getting any money in. Like, and right. I said to him, I said, like, if you were a business, like, if you were thinking like me, I'd think, well, actually, if we push this guy's stuff for a little bit, see loads of interactions, then he might start paying for advertising. Or, you know, I actually cancelled my my blue tick, because I was like, well, they ask you a question, why? And I just said, well, what's the point of me having it? Like, it does nothing for me. And I'm now paying £12 a month for nothing, because my account's fucking flagged or whatever. And they kept giving me like 3 months and stuff, so I kept pushing that for fucking ages. And then eventually, obviously, it sorted its life out. But I mean, it sorted to a degree, like I say. The jokey posts do well, and I have been getting sales from it, but it's a struggle, I'd say. You know, it's not like a direct sale. Like, if you post a picture of a knife, you used to be able to just post a picture of a knife or whatever, and you get it sells straight away. Like, that's
yeah, fish in a barrel.
That's the fault with the YouTube video. That's why the YouTube sort of stopped. My earnings dropped on YouTube, but before it didn't really matter because I was selling what I was making. And then it got to the point where I'd post the video that used to do really well and someone would buy it, and I've got loads of shit left over now. What you know, it's slowly selling, but not like it was before where it'd just be sold out. So then it's like, well, that's not worth me doing the long format videos because no one's buying the stuff from it. And then even, like I say, making knives, I'm met more of the customs than when I do like the odd like ad hoc one where I'll put it on there, and it might take a while to sell because literally no one's seen it. So it's they make it hard for themselves, you know. Like, they'd make more money if they let people be seen.
Well, I was telling my wife this yesterday. We were talking about social media because she doesn't really give a shit. Like, she doesn't care, and she doesn't. And it's just like we're also both of the age where it's like, is this really our topic of conversation? And we were talking about it, and I was talking about you, and I was talking about some other people in terms of like getting monetized, the idea of getting monetized. And she was, and I said, I did it one time, and then they took it away. And I said, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to play these games. And she says, well, why do people do it? And I said, I don't know, frankly. I said, but nobody gets a contract. Like, Instagram, YouTube, they're you have to see them as the TV program, the TV channel, and they're paying people to create content for their channel. They're it's like a bounty. I said, but the problem is there's no contract written up, so they can decide we're not doing that anymore tomorrow. Yeah. Like, we were getting money. I don't know who told me. I think it was Chris Cash said, well, you're making the videos, you might as well get paid for them. I'm like, yeah, he's got a point. So I signed up for it. We were getting like, you know, we were doing pretty good. This is years ago. And then they're all of a sudden, they're just going, yeah, by the way, we're taking that away. And I'm just like, why would I want to do that? I don't want to get in bed with a company that doesn't give me a contract. Yeah. I'm not doing this anymore. They can change their mind all the time. And that's the crazy part, is there's so many people who don't have any experience in terms of how the world works. And they don't understand that usually what happens with a famous person is they'll get a contract. And then both sides will agree to the contract, and then they'll kind of do what they're meant to be doing for the contract. And if the contract is broken, then someone gets, you know, penalized. Well, in a situation like this, they make the rules up as they go along. So who wants to do that?
Yeah,
I get worried for you guys. I get worried for you guys.
Balls as well, though, don't they? They've got because people get the social media taken away from them or stopped, and people crumble like that. I mean, you've only got to look at when TikTok was getting banned in the US. Fucking hell!
The meltdowns
that people had. I was like, fuck. Like this is the thing. What I think's my saving grace is I've still got a business, and I'd like to think that it could still float by as it is without the earnings from there. Like the earnings from there is good, but I can still sell stuff and make stuff. But these people, like, a lot of these people have got no fucking talent. Like, they're just doing, like, fucking reaction videos, which, like, I've actually said this a few times on the podcast, but some people's reaction videos are good. Some people just do it and they just have a knack for it. Like, they'll put a lot of effort into it. But some people, they're just sitting there, they'll watch a video, they'll pull a face, and it's just like, that's not, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're not really doing anything. I actually saw one the other day where it was someone who posted someone else's reaction video and they were reacting over the top of it. And all they were doing was pulling similar faces to the guy who you could see behind him anyway. And I just thought, what the fuck is going on with the world? Like,
There's so many people. I know people who've quit their jobs to be full-time content creators. They don't sell anything. They don't have anything behind them. And they're just hoping that this turns into something. And the way the way social media has changed over the years, you know, it's clearly changed.
Yeah.
That it's just, way. I can't believe people are like quitting their jobs and they're putting on their sunglasses and they're content creators now without any kind of like backup. I can't believe it.
See, that's the thing. Like, I quit YouTube, I mean, probably be about 3 months ago now. Like, imagine me at that situation if I didn't have a business out of it. I'd be fucked. I'd probably still be trying to scrape by on the fucking pissy earnings that I was getting off YouTube, I think.
Speaking of pissy earnings, how's... I know you have an OnlyFans. How is the OnlyFans going? And God bless you. God bless you. I am 100%... I used to make jokes, but now I'm just like, what anybody got to do, they got to do whatever it takes.
Do you know what,
and sometimes your best isn't good enough.
You don't even have to sell pictures of your butthole or your penis. All I do is I put pictures of me in... when I'm in the gym, so like with my top off, and they love it. And it's just gay men who, it seems to be gay men. I don't even think, but I think I've maybe got one woman on there. But like, the first month that I was on there, I made $2,000.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
That's crazy!
And like, it literally said on the thing that you are in the top 0.8% of earners. And I was like, fuck, people are earning fuck all. If I'm only earning $2,000 and people must be earning next to nothing on the lower down ones. But, you know, like, it's... And I've got people who are subscribed, like, they're just subscribed for a long period of time. People who are sending me tips. Like, I posted a video the other day of me lifting weights in the gym with my top off, and I had $40 in tips just from loads of different people. That's fucking... It's easy money. I mean, I might just stop making knives and fucking sell pictures.
I think it's fantastic. Were you surprised? How surprised were you?
Yeah, to be fair, I was, because I did it as a joke. Like I said to...
Yeah, you've been talking about that as a joke forever. Like, so many of knife makers have been like, I'm going to have to start an OnlyFans. And then they start the OnlyFans, and then they're just like not making any jokes whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, it's just like the reality is... I mean, you must have been shocked when that first check came in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's still floating in now. Like, I think it was... Saturday night, I woke up and I had 12 new subscribers, and it's $20 as well, like $20 per subscriber. So I thought, oh, that's fucking easy money.
Madness.
Like, fucking hell. And all I've got to do is literally just post pictures what I would put, you know, in the little snippets that I've been posting on Instagram and Facebook anyway. They're just getting those types of pictures. Like, nothing untoward or anything like that. I don't even have to, because obviously I'm not gay. I'm not going to do anything... Like, I'm not going to...
He's the X-rated version of sticking your dick in the light socket.
Yeah.
You can do the unedited version.
just
where you don't explode.
You get to see me in my pants and stuff.
I think it's awesome. Listen, I think anything you could do, I think it's hilarious. Because for years you've been like joking about it, and then you did it, and you're just like, I shouldn't make any jokes anymore. Yeah. This is like real actual money.
It's weird. And like I said to Emma, like I said, imagine how much some of these people are earning as well. Because I've seen how easy it is just for me as just a guy. And I mean, a guy with like, for some reason, gay men seem to like me. And I don't know why. But just
well, I mean, you're put together. You're doing something. You're funny. You got like personality. You get covered in tattoos. And what's not to like?
They like my hairy back as well for some reason. Like most people hate my hairy back.
Do you get any comments from people?
Yeah, I get. Do you know what? Actually, I showed Emma one the other day. So I've been getting them on my Instagram as well. Where guy, this is actually the reason why I set it up. I started getting when I did one of the. In fact, the meme where I was like. I can't weld, I can't do that, and I'm gay or whatever. It was that, and that's just been booming. I think it's nearly at a million views.
Oh my
and
god!
I've had so many people come from that, and men just started inboxing me, sending me pictures. Like one guy sent me a picture of his asshole. He sent me a
get
picture
out
of
here.
Dick. He sent me.
Oh
a
my
of,
god!
He sent me a picture of a video of him sucking a guy off. And I was just like, I actually said to Emma, I said, now I know what women feel like. You know, like, because it's an age-old joke, in it, that women just get sent dick pics. And I'm like, now I'm the woman, and I'm getting sent dick pics of guys. So I was like I spoke to someone else, and they said to me, just set up at OnlyFans, send them there, direct them there. So now, whenever anyone inboxes me out, I'm just like, just send them the link. I mean, a few people have fucking cried about it. Like, I had one guy, I did post it on, I think I put, oh no, I posted a story about it. And he got real mad with me. Like, he kept calling me cute and stuff, and I was like, thank you. And then he, I think I posted a picture of Emma or something, and he said, you've got a wife. I didn't realise you were straight. And then he started calling me all sorts of names, like he was mad at me. Like, he thought he was my boyfriend, I guess, and then realised that I'd been cheating on him for however many years. Me and Emma have been together, like 13 years or something. And he went fucking crazy at me, and I thought, I know what women feel like now. Like, I feel sorry for some women. Like, I feel sorry for these really good-looking women who are just getting this on a daily fucking basis. It's bullshit.
This is a very new way of gaining empathy. It's brand new. This is like a brand new social experiment. Like, how do you give someone empathy? How do you make them empathetic? Well, what you do is you make them do an OnlyFans, and then you have to let them deal with what everybody else has to deal with, and then all of a sudden you gain this perspective.
Yeah, it is crazy. I get people, and they'll like send me a message saying, "Do you want to see me pleasuring myself?" And I'm just like, "No, not really. No, I'm just trying to eat my breakfast. That's all."
I'm with my kids here. What are you doing?
Yeah, like I'll ask Emma if she wants to see it. Like, it's not right for me. Like,
so what does she think about all this? Does she think it's funny?
Yeah, she finds it. She finds it funny. Like, she's fucking, she's on board for it. Because obviously I've got a lot of followers who find Emma attractive, and they keep saying to me, "When's Emma gonna start doing it?"
Oh god, people are so gross. I see all that shit. I see these dudes, and you just see these like frothing bearded fat blacksmiths who are just like. Getting gross towards your wife, and I always be like, he doesn't need to deal with that. He doesn't need to deal with that.
I see it as like a term of endearment. Like,
endearment. Yeah, yeah, it's a term of endearment. That's for sure. Not endearment. It's endearment. Yeah, endearment. She got to deal with it, dude. You're hilarious, guys. We could be here all day, but I mean, my man's got to take some more pictures of his butthole for his thirsty OnlyFans listeners.
Jeff pretending like he's my number one subscriber on there.
That's right. I've been there since day one, baby. I'm the one. I'm the one sending you them dick pics. Holy shit. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Guys, I want you to go follow Honor on Instagram and Facebook. Dies in Every Film Customs. He is the man.
I know OnlyFans.
You go listen to the. If you want to hear more about his experience as a fighter, we had a couple episodes where we were breaking down some of his fight videos. His fight videos are unbelievable. If you go to the first episode, I link all the fight videos that he was in, and we talked about him. That's really cool. He's the man, Emma. I got to tell you one last thing. I think you're a fantastic person, and I think that you're a terrific role model for your kids. I think that every time I see pictures of you and your family, you guys are doing great things together. They're always smiling. I think what you're doing is fantastic, and I think that I'm always rooting for you. I'm always rooting for you.
Just try to keep that old school dream alive, I think.
Look at you. Keep those. That's what your OnlyFans motto should be. Trying to keep that old school theme alive, baby.
Yeah, by selling my butthole pictures.
It don't get much better than that, ladies and gentlemen. Guys, we will see you next week. Thank you so much, Otter.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.